with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.
Hi, I'm Pavan.
And I'm Sabine. Welcome to the 70th episode of Robots. In today's show, we focus on robots that use their sense of smell to get around. Our first guest, Hiroshi Ishida from Tokyo University, is an expert in the field, having developed artificial noses for flying, ground, and underwater robots.
Our second guest, Thomas Lockmatter, is an expert in olfactory behavior. He deployed a swarm of Kepra robots to localize odor sources. But first, let's listen to the latest news in robotics from Christine.
Thanks, Pavan. Researchers of the European project Safe Road Trains for the Environment, or SARTRE, have demonstrated how an autonomous car can follow a human-driven test vehicle. The real-world demonstration marked a key milestone in achieving vehicle platooning, where a convoy of vehicles follows a professional driver in a lead vehicle by adjusting its movements to the distance, speed, and the direction of the car in front. Once in a platoon, this allows drivers to relax and do other things like reading or even taking a nap while the platoon drives towards its long-distance destination. The researchers hope that platooning will not only improve road safety, but will also allow to reduce fuel consumption and emissions and even reduce traffic congestion, because cars would travel at highway speeds with only a few meters between them. According to the researchers, the technology will be in production in a few years. Researchers at Northwestern University are exploring an interesting form of locomotion based on the black ghost knifefish found in the Amazon basin rivers that could be useful for underwater robotic propulsion. Using computational fluid dynamics and a robot model of the fish's fins, they could show how the animal can control its movements in three dimensions. The researchers are now working on understanding the fish's fin sensory counterpart and hope to integrate both sensing and actuation. For more information on this week's news, as well as many other news stories, have a look at the Robots website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks, Christine. Hiroshi Ishida is an associate professor at the Tokyo University of Agriculture and Technology. He's an expert in biomimetic robotic systems with an emphasis on olfactory sensing for mobile robots. Over the years, he's developed the active stereo nose and the crayfish robots that can track chemical sources underwater. Adrian has more on that later.
Hi, Hiroshi, and welcome to Robots.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me to this podcast interview.
You're welcome. Can you start by introducing yourself to our audience?
Yes. My name is Hiroshi Ishida. I am an associate professor with the Department of Mechanical Systems Engineering, Tokyo University of Agriculture and Technology. And I have been working on mobile robot olfaction, I think now it's 18 years.
What is the motivation behind your work?
When I entered a master course, the task given to me for my master thesis work was to develop a robot that can search for gas sources. And at that time, I didn't know how I could done it. But after a while, I found that many animals have already got solutions for how to find gas sources or smell sources. And then I got very interested in learning animal behaviors and replicate it with building robots.
What do you mean by replicating animal behavior?
By studying animal behavior, we can learn how animals accomplish some given tasks, and by implementing the basic mechanisms into hardware or software of the robots, we can make the robots do similar things. And by the word replicating, I try to mean that making robots that can do similar things accomplished by animals.
You've been working on something called active sniffing. Could you explain the concept?
Yes. Mammalian animals, when they try to smell something, they sniff. And by sniffing, they actively generate airflow that brings odorant molecules from the object they are sniffing to their nose. And the main purpose is, of course, to enhance the chemical or odorant reception. But some animals use these active flow generation for some other purposes. For example, some animal can change the direction of the airflow they generate. And by doing that, they can collect odor samples from a specific direction and use it for searching for odor sources or foods, for example.
You have developed a device called the active stereo nose. Could you tell us about it and how it works?
Yes, active stereo nose is a gas sensing device that allows you to determine the direction of the gas source. It has two gas sensors, one on the right and one on the left, and you can compare the gas concentrations on the right and the left. And the most important part of the active stereo nose is it has a suction pump, and air sample is sucked to the gas sensors to enhance the chemical reception, and exhaust of the pump is fed back to generate air curtain between the two suction port of the sensing device, and that air curtain helps in comparing the left and right gas concentration.
Your work doesn't focus only on odor sensing in air. You also do chemical sensing underwater. What are the additional constraints when working underwater?
For underwater chemical sensing, the most practical problem is the everything has to be watertight. All the electronic parts has to be inside the waterproof body. But in terms of chemical sensing, the biggest difference is the speed of the diffusion of chemical substances. In water, the diffusion rate is 100 times smaller than diffusion of gas molecules in air, and therefore you get chemical signal only if you put your sensor very close to the chemical substance. Otherwise, you cannot get any response. In air, the gas molecules can diffuse very easily and quickly for over a couple of centimeters, but that couple of centimeters is very crucial length for underwater chemical sensing.
You've developed a robot called the Crayfish for underwater chemical sensing. Could you describe it and maybe tell us about the way in which it is similar to its biological counterpart?
Yes, this is actually a collaborative project with my friend and a biologist, Thomas Breithaupt, with University of Hull in United Kingdom. He found that when a crayfish searches for food, the crayfish actively generate water currents by waving their small appendages with fan-like shape. And my crayfish robot mimics that active flow generation. It has fanning arms and generate water currents to collect chemical samples from the surrounding to enhance chemical reception and also enhance the contrast between the left and right chemical sensor signals.
What kind of experiments was it used for?
So far, we have done experiments in a large water tank with a diameter of 3 meters and let the robot try to find a chemical source in that water tank. And we got very successful results recently.
A lot of your work is focused on the actual hardware of the olfaction device. How important would you say is the balance between hardware and software in olfaction?
I think the balance between hardware and software design is very important because sometimes with a tweak of hardware, you can solve problems that cannot be solved by even a cutting-edge, very sophisticated software. For example, in the case of active stereo nose, the air curtain helps a lot in enhancing the difference between left and right chemical or gas sensor signals. Without air curtain, it is difficult, very difficult to determine which sensor is showing larger response because there's very large fluctuations and the difference you're going to measure is very small. So you need to have very sophisticated software to extract small difference in the sensor signal from a very noisy sensor responses.
Can you tell us about your current work and projects?
The active stereo nose and a crayfish robot is currently my two main research topics, but I'm also working on a terrestrial wheeled robot for gas plume tracking, and also I'm working on trying to develop a device called olfactory display, which is basically a smell generator that you use with your TV set or PC to add smells to movies or video games.
Where do you see your work heading towards further into the future?
My ultimate goal is to build a robot which is like a dog. And I think the research of mobile robot olfaction is in a transition phase. We have shown that the robots can find chemical sources if the given environment is very simple. And now we are trying to move on to more complicated, more realistic environments. And the ultimate goal is a versatile robot, exactly like a dog. But on the way of reaching there, I think we will have more specialized robots, which is adapted for specific environments, or specialized tools, which is used for specific environments. And for example, I'm planning to make a device which is like a vacuum cleaner, but on its tip, we have an active stereo nose to get the direction of the gas sources.
Thank you, Hiroshi, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you.
Thomas Lockmatter did his PhD at the EPFL on distributed odor source localization with a team of Kepra robots. He'll be telling us about the algorithms he developed just for that purpose.
Hi, Thomas, and welcome to Robots.
Hello.
Can you tell us a bit about the general problem of odor source localization? How does your work fit into the big picture?
Well, odor source localization, as the name suggests, is about finding the location of an odor source. So imagine you have something that stinks somewhere or something you want to find that smells. You would probably nowadays take a dog, a trained dog, and then try to localize this odor source with a dog. What we're trying to do is to develop robots that are able to do that task. Robots that have an odor sensor, so sort of an artificial nose that allows them to smell substances, chemical substances in the air, and to eventually track down odor sources.
So what do your robots look like?
So we basically took a commercial differential drive robot, it was a Kepra 3 in our case, and then built two additional modules for that robot. One module obviously was the electronic nose. That was a module that consists of an odor sensor. That's a little chemical, electrochemical device that changes its resistance respect to the odor concentration in the air, in our case, ethanol. And we connected that sensor to a little pump so that we could actively sniff air. Then we built a second sensor board for the robot, which was a wind sensor board. So basically, a little hat that we put on top of the robot that tells us from which direction the wind comes from. Because it turns out that for all algorithms that we use to track down odor sources, knowing where the wind comes from is a very important piece of information, because that's also where the smell comes from, because chemical molecules are mainly transported with wind flow, and the diffusion that happens also is a phenomena that can almost be neglected.
Your research looked into both biologically inspired and probabilistic methods for solving this problem. Could you tell us what are the trade-offs of each of these approaches?
Yes, indeed. We looked into several classes of such odor source localization algorithms. And the first class we considered were these bio-inspired odor source localization algorithms. Those are algorithms that basically work with very simple state machines that produce trajectories that are similar to what insects are doing in the air. For example, these robots would then, if we let them run with these algorithms, they would go upwind as long as they are in the plume, and as soon as they lose the plume, they would do a spiral motion until they find the plume again. So that was the first type of algorithms that we considered. There's a second class of algorithms as well that we considered, and those are the probabilistic algorithms. The probabilistic algorithms work in a significantly different way. Here, every robot is sensing information in the air, and we're fusing that information using a Bayesian probability model together, and the robots are afterwards, or the robot is afterwards taking a decision to find out whether it should move rather towards the left, towards the right, or just go straight, in order to find more and more information about the plume. So it's sort of an approach that guides the robot towards locations in which it finds the maximum information. And with that, at least from a mathematical point of view, the robot should, in a sort of greedy optimal way, be able to find the odor source. Now, if we compare these two main approaches, they are quite different. So one of them is the biologically inspired algorithms are very easy to implement, very simple. They don't need a lot of computational power. And on the other side, the probabilistic algorithms, they are the complete opposite. So it takes quite some time to implement them, to implement these probabilistic models. And they also consume a lot of memory and computational power to carry out this calculation. Now, if you're applying them to a robot with a limited amount of computational power, you have to be careful that that calculating this next step of the algorithm doesn't take more time than the source to move, for example. And we therefore, for these probabilistic algorithms, we finally came up with a number of optimization steps that allow us to run those algorithms on the same robotic platform as the bio-inspired algorithms. But it was a much simplified version as compared to the pure mathematical model.
You've worked with both single and multiple robot systems. Could you tell us what happens when moving from one to the other?
Yeah, I have to answer these questions again for both algorithmic classes separately. Because for the bio-inspired algorithms, we first started just executing exactly the same bio-inspired algorithm on several robots at the same time and let them move in our wind tunnel environment in which we carried out the experiments. We just let them move in parallel. And it turned out that that was not a very good approach because these robots were in fact competing for space. So imagine there are two robots going upwind side by side. One of them loses the plume and then starts the spiral motion, and by doing this spiral motion bumps into the other robot. So the other robot would then, because it's doing obstacle avoidance, lose track of the plume also, and therefore the gain we got with this approach was extremely small. Sometimes in some runs were even considerably worse than the single robot runs. We then improved that a little bit. We had a closer look into that issue and finally came up with another algorithm that does a formation-based thing, meaning that the robots are moving upwind in a very tight formation. We call that the crosswind formation algorithm. And this way, they never bumped into each other, and we found that that was a very, very good strategy for finding odor sources in at least relatively simple environments. For the probabilistic algorithms, the story is quite a bit different because in the probabilistic algorithms, you can basically take into account of the different locations of the robots, and they would, if you do it right, they would not bump into each other by design. So you don't need really an obstacle avoidance algorithm. All that can be done in the path planning part of the probabilistic algorithms. However, the main issue there is that if you increase the number of robots, the computational time increases exponentially with those number of robots. So we did a couple of experiments with, for example, two robots, and we even did a couple of experiments, at least simulation experiments, with three robots. However, moving to, say, 20 robots is, from a computational point of view, at the moment, not feasible. Fortunately, there's a solution to that as well, because you can apply a little simplification to these probabilistic algorithms, which makes that the problem is mathematically not precisely, not 100% correct anymore, But for all practical cases, the algorithm still works very well. And then the computational time increases only linearly with the number of robots. And with that, you could imagine building robotic networks of several dozens of robots.
If you were to choose a single specific real-world problem that you would like to see odor sensing robots solve, what would that be?
Well, we have to consider that this whole odor source localization field is still very much a research field. And with the results we currently have, we could imagine, for example, deploying a couple of sensors in an industrial environment, an environment for which we know the architecture, for which we know how the wind flows are, for example, and also an environment for which we know what exactly, precisely, what type of chemical we are looking for. Assume, for example, an industrial plant with a lot of gas pipes, and you want to build a system that monitors these gas pipes and then tells you immediately when there's gas coming out of some of these of a leak in these pipes. You could, with the current research results, easily build a system that monitors that and tells you where exactly this leak is. If we think about more general purpose applications like search and rescue, so if you really want to go and replace dogs for search and rescue operations, that's clearly not feasible at the moment. For that, we should still take dogs because our robots are by far not as good as those dogs for such general purpose situations. That starts with the sensors, for example, which are not as good as a dog's nose for all the variety of chemicals a dog is able to discriminate and smell, all the way down to other sensors like dogs are using vision, dogs are using the history of what they've done before, and so on. So, and obviously also the robotic platform that would be needed to run on debris, for example, after earthquakes and so on. So, of course, those are extremely fancy applications, and I would really like to see them in the future. But I would say it takes at least 10 to 20 years of more research until we get there.
I know you have some startup experience in an unrelated field. Are you thinking about a startup based on your research too?
Creating a startup in the field of odor source localization could definitely be an interesting opportunity at the moment. However, I learned through my experience that if you're a founder of another startup, you need to dedicate 100% of your time to that startup. And therefore, I'm at the moment not even considering creating another startup beside.
Thank you, Thomas, for joining us on Robots.
Thank you very much.
That's it for today's episode of Robots. For more information on our guests and to read up on the latest news in robotics, don't forget to check out our website at www.robotspodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Sniff with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.